It has been a while since I've been with you to lead in the lesson time, and I do want to acknowledge with a great deal of gratitude the work that Lloyd Atkinson, Tom Williams, and the Burroughs did during the time that I had a little time off. I have thought a little bit that it is something of a measure, I don't know exactly what it measures, that you guys keep coming, even though I'm the one that's usually up here. But we are back in Genesis, so if you can find Genesis, we will begin to pick up our work back there. And I think probably the place to go is chapter 29 and 30, just for a moment to get us started again. It's been a few weeks since we've talked about this. In chapter 29, Jacob has had an experience at a place that he names Bethel. He comes into the area where his uncle Laban lives, ends up finding a place there, and promises to work for Laban for 7 years in return for being able to marry Laban's daughter Rachel. And what we looked at before was the trickster gets tricked. Jacob finds out, and I think we leave the curtains closed on how he found out that the night of his wedding he ended up marrying the older sister and not the younger sister. He worked 7 more years for Rachel, although it seems that the front of that 7 years was when he had Rachel as a wife. And we looked through what had happened after that, the children born to Leah, the children not born to Rachel, the introduction of the same thing that Abraham had done, where slave girls came in to try to give Rachel children, and with the attendant problems and tensions that came from that. And by the time everything is over, Rachel has finally had a child. We are looking now at verse 22, 23, 24 in chapter 30. Rachel finally had a child. This is Joseph. And the story at that point stops talking about the birth of children and turns to what is happening between Jacob and Laban. So what I'd like to do, because something very important is coming, I'd like to skip over genetics and other kinds of animal husbandry experimentation, which fills the rest of chapter 30, to simply say, through one means or another, there seems to be a hint of God's miracles. There seems to be a hint of a careful use of genetics and mating studies. He has ended up trying to trick Laban back, and Laban trying to trick him back by deciding what his wages are going to be. And the wages seem to be based on the appearance of the animals. If the animals look like this, then they belong to Jacob. And if they look like that, they belong to Laban. And each time it looks like, well, Jacob's getting the better end of that, Laban switches, and all of a sudden, whatever animals Jacob's supposed to be getting, that's the ones that seems to be both productive and producing lots of offspring, and the offspring are healthier and stronger. So by the end of chapter 30, Jacob is now rich in his own right, and Laban, in comparison, is starting to look a little bit poor. Now, what I want you to do for a moment is to imagine what this might produce in the tensions between Jacob, the newcomer, and Laban's sons. Not to mention Laban. Can you imagine the tensions that might be there? What response might come from Jacob? Run. That's been his response a couple of times before when tensions got high. Okay, so if you look at the last of chapter 30, the last verse, verse 43, thus the man, that is Jacob, grew extremely rich and came to own large flocks, men and women slaves, camels and donkeys. Chapter 31, verse 1, opens you up to the tensions. Jacob learned that Laban's sons were saying, Jacob has taken everything that belonged to our father. It is at our father's expense that he has acquired all this wealth. And there is some truth to that. This turns out to be almost everywhere around you if you look a bit. There are interesting things that happen in scientific research. Somebody has a great idea, turns around to some students to actually do the work in the lab, and the question is whose name should go on the papers? And where should the names go on the papers? Should they go up near the front? Should they go back near the back? When credit is taken, there's an interesting little thing that you may not know. How many people are allowed to win a single Nobel Prize in science or any other thing else? Do you know?
Two.
The answer is three. So what happens if four people were involved in something? This is a very simple answer. Go for it. Somebody gets left out. And whoever gets left out tends to be somewhat upset. And there are some fairly famous feuds of this sort that have been out there in science. The ones in chemistry we know about a little bit better. Whose belongs to this? Jacob has been laboring. He labored, and his wages were going to be the wives that he got. But now, what happens after that time is over? What are his wages now? And it seems like in that process, Jacob is trying to trick Laban. Laban's trying to trick Jacob. And it seems like at every turn, Jacob's getting the better end of the bargain. And so now the tensions have risen high enough that things are upset. It is at our father's expense he has required all this wealth, verse 2, and Jacob also saw that Laban's manner toward him was not as it had been in the past. And at that moment, God speaks. Notice in verse 3, God speaks. Did you see this? I'll leave it to you to read, but the essence of it is God said it's time to go. I think Jacob would have come to that conclusion anyway. I think he was already coming there in verse 2 and verse 1. But now God is affirming that. It's time to go. The question is, how do you go? How do you accomplish this? Now, let that sit for just a moment. How many times has Jacob encountered God so far in the story? He grew up in the home of Isaac, but it's not clear how many times Jacob himself encountered God. What's Jacob been doing? He's been taking matters into his own hands. Or he's been partnering with his mom, Rebekah, to take matters into their own hands. And now here he is, and God has visited. He visited him once on the way to Laban's place. Where was that place? We said it as we started this morning. Bethel. Remember that encounter? He saw the ladder or the stairway or whatever you call it, and saw this. God is in this place, and I didn't know it. Now God's in this place, and he didn't know it. And God is saying it's time to go. Now, again, summarizing what happens between verse 3 and verse 21, read verse 21. What does it say? My first word is thus. What's your first word or two?
So.
Okay? You might translate that in this way, and then you've got everything between verse 3 and verse 20 in this way. Now, my next phrase is very interesting. He got away with all that he had. And he was soon across the river and headed for Mount Gilead. I'm not sure which river that was. It might have been far enough that it was the Euphrates. I don't think it was quite that far, but there's a major river. He's made it across the river, and rivers are barriers. If you were in the worship service this morning, you heard a little bit about that. Rivers become major barriers. So he's made it across the river with all that he had. How does yours translate that phrase, got away?
Fled.
Anything else? Okay. The picture that you have is that if Laban had looked from a distance, he still would have seen the tents set up. It would have appeared from a distance. If Laban, just sort of checking what's going on today, he would have seen some evidence. Chances are, Jacob's clever enough to do this, he might have left enough herds in the right kind of places, just a pittance compared to what he had taken, but he might have left just enough animals to where it would look like the land was still occupied and all this. So it looks like it took Laban a little while to figure out what had happened. But eventually Laban figured out what had happened. If you're Laban, what do you do? You give chase. And so a good part of what follows, this goes down to about verse 42, is the story of Laban following. Again, I'll leave this for you to read. Laban accosts Jacob, gives him all kinds of accusations, and the most powerful one is, you took my daughters away without giving me the chance to say goodbye. That's a pretty powerful argument for a father to use. Jacob essentially says in response, if I hadn't done what I did, you wouldn't have let me get away with anything. And I've earned what I took. You've changed my wages 10 times over. And I earned what I took. There's also a little hint in here of two things that I want to make sure you notice. What was the first trick Laban played on him? And it's still the big one. Leah instead of Rachel. How many times does Jacob throw that in Laban's face? This is a very important thing to notice. Count them up. How many times does he throw that in Laban's face? Zero. Not once. That is interesting. Why not? What's your conclusion? He had fallen in love with Leah too. At least at the level of appreciation of who she was, of the children that she had given him. His firstborn child had come from Leah. He throws everything else in Laban's face except that one. And it's conspicuous by that. Okay. Number two, you may also notice that Rachel has done something that she wasn't supposed to do. Have you skimmed through this? Your assignment when last we spoke, months ago it seems like, was to read at least up to chapter 32, maybe 33. What did she do? She stole what are called in my translation the household gods. What does that mean? Does yours say idols? Because that's what they were. Does it say that? Maybe. I doubt they'd melt those down. Yeah, but they were.
Why did you steal my gods?
Why did you steal the idols? And what you see is that the doors open just a little bit. The worship of God is not settled among these people. They're not settled among Laban's people. They're not even settled among Jacob and his wives. Those idols still have power for them. And you might want to keep in mind as you read through the rest of Genesis, keep an eye on what happens to those household gods. See where they end up. They end up under an oak tree in a hole in the ground. And they're left behind. As far as anybody knows, they're still there. But he took them, and they took them because they had meaning. And Rachel tricks her father in an interesting womanly way to keep him from discovering them, because Jacob had said, go hunt. Look through my stuff. You find those things, whoever has them will die. And Rachel had them. Don't know for sure that Jacob knew that. But he made the challenge. And Rachel tricks her father. All this to say, we get to the point where he can say in verse 42 of chapter 31, If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, the kinsman of Isaac, had not been with me, you'd have sent me away empty-handed. But God saw my plight and my labors, and last night he delivered judgment. Last night he delivered judgment. Verse 43, Laban replied to Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and this livestock is my livestock. Everything you see belongs to me. But what can I do about my daughters today, or about the children they have borne? So come, let's make a pact, you and me, and let that serve as a witness between us. Now, what kind of a pact are they making? It's very important that you see this. What kind of pact are they making? They set up a tower of stones, a cairn, if you use the old Scottish word for it. Okay. Verse 51, here is this cairn I have thrown up between us. Here is this pillar. The cairn is a witness. The pillar is a witness. Read the rest of that verse. What does it say? It's verse 52, I think, by the way.
Verse 52.
I'm not going to go past it in the direction you're going, and you better not go past it back where I am. We are breaking our relationship. You come across this point, you come past this point, you're liable to be killed by me or by my servants or by my sons. So far, so good. But let's make the break. Right? Now that's more or less where we want to start the key part of what we're seeing. If you take a look at verse 54, Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain. He invited his kinsmen to the meal. They ate the meal. They passed the night together on the mountain. Chapter 31, verse 1, in my account, there may be a different place in yours. Early the next morning, Laban kissed his grandchildren and his daughters and blessed them, and he left to return home. And angels of God encountered him a second time. This is the third time overall that he's had encounters with God. It's not clear what the purpose of the angels were. It just says that he encountered angels of God. That's the way my translation renders it. Does yours say something different?
Many.
He names the place Mahanaim, which is supposed to mean God's camp. Here's Laban's camp back there. Here's where Jacob is on the way, and Jacob doesn't have a camp. He's now in between. Okay. What's up ahead of Jacob? This is what I want. This is where we're trying to get. Esau. He left Esau behind when he went that way. Now Esau's ahead. Laban's behind, and the door has been slammed shut. And God has given him a sense, but I'm still here, and I'm still where you are. My servants, my angels are with you. Now, it may be chapter 32, verse 2. It may be verse 3. It may be verse 4. But somewhere in there you will see Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau. Right? Okay. Where is Esau? He is in Seir or Seir or however you might want to pronounce that. Right? What does that phrase mean? This is the name of the country where Esau is. Oh no. Syria is up north. I don't know exactly how to draw this to scale, but you've got Sea of Galilee up here, Jordan River in between, Dead Sea down here. Okay. Seir, which later will be called Edom, the land of Esau, that's down here, sort of in this region, probably not on that side of the Dead Sea. Down in like that. Okay? Where's the Promised Land? Promised Land's in here. We'll call that the PL. Okay? Where is Jacob coming from?
East.
Over here somewhere, which is?
East.
From the direction of you are?
Yeah.
You ever notice that?
Yeah.
Okay, I know it's. But it's not that way, right? And what he's done is he's coming in like this, probably coming in pretty close to the Jordan River. But he's probably coming in like this, right? So where's Esau coming from? He's coming from here. So what's about to happen? They're going to meet. He sent messengers ahead to tell Esau, I'm coming home. All right? He sent messengers ahead. He sent some instructions with them. Your brother is rich. Verse 6 or 7, whichever one it is in your translation, the messengers return with a message of their own. What's their message? Esau's coming to meet you. Oh, good news. Brother Esau's coming. Yay! Except, what's the rest of the message? He's got 400 armed men with him. Now, let's review. What does Jacob have? Sheep, donkeys, camels, cows, slaves, wives, children. And he's got Jacob. I got to tell you this. I'm to the point where I read the obituaries. Are you guys to the point where you read the obituaries?
My father always called it the old lady sports page.
Guilty as charged. Yesterday, there was what must have been a delightful woman. Her obituary was there. Five names, including Montague, somewhere in the middle. And down through this thing, it says she left behind to cherish her memory 10 grandchildren and 6.9 great-grandchildren. I think that's delightful. Somebody in the middle of all that grief acknowledged a baby that was on the way. Okay? What did Jacob have? Who's Esau coming with?
400
men. Six translations say 400 armed men were with him, or some variation on that. One translation says he had an army of 400. That's the translation that I think captures what Jacob's thinking. Okay? Where are they coming from? Seir, which ultimately would have been named Edom. And what does that word seer mean? This is, if you don't laugh, I don't know where you get it. That's the name of the country. Hairy and rough. I'm sorry, what's Esau? Hairy and rough. It's the right name for the country. If they called it Esau's country, they couldn't have gotten it any better. Did you know that? I didn't know that before this week. Some of you may have seen that before this week. I hadn't seen that. And it got me going so much on names that ended up I looked up another one. And this one's coming, and it's going to be amazing. There's another one in this story. It's right here in this chapter. Okay. So here comes Esau and 400 men from the hairy and rough country. And here's Jacob, who has been working a bit. He's not, you know, milquetoast anymore. But he's mainly armed with donkeys and cattle and sheep and the people who drive those. He is not, that's why he ran. He doesn't have fighting men. So what do you do? Verse 7 or 8. This is the very next verse after the one that speaks of the 400 men. It expresses his mental state. What does it say? Okay, so we have greatly afraid.
Distressed.
And we have distressed. And greatly afraid is also called terrified. And there may be some other words. Any other words?
Mine uses worried.
Worried. I think that might be.
Worried to death.
Worried to death. Okay. Any other? I need the words. Are there any other verbs in there?
Panic.
Is that with a K or just the C?
It says with a K.
So P-A-N-I-C-K-E-D? Okay. Any other words?
Frantic.
Frantic. Yeah, you can make up some that might go with these. You might make up some. Why is he afraid? What was the last message he got from Esau? You're going to die, and I'm going to be the one that administers that. So here we are 20 years later. He's wealthy. He's got lots of sons and children, but they may not be old enough to fight all that well yet. But even if they did, there's maybe 12 of them. Actually 11 now, and Joseph's probably a babe in arms. And they're up against how many men? 400. And what's the description of those men?
Hairy
and rough. Okay. He is terrified. Now, when you follow the next little bit, I want to show you a couple of things here. What does he do? The end of that verse, it's still in that same verse, he does something. What's his first act? He divides everything he has into two groups. Not his wives, not his children, not his personal entourage, his personal servants, but all of the sheep and the cattle and the donkeys and the camels and the goats. Divides them all up into how many groups? Two. And the next verse tells you what he was thinking. What was he thinking? Maybe Esau can't attack them both at once if I keep them far enough. If he attacks one, maybe the other one can live. If he doesn't attack, okay, fine, they both survive. But at least part of them will survive. Okay? What's the next thing he does? How many times have we seen Jacob praying up to this point?
You don't know. I know
we don't know. How many times has the Bible shown it? How many times has the Bible recorded Jacob as praying? Even at Bethel, it's a response to what God has revealed. It's not so much a prayer. Okay? It is true that at verse 54 of 31, he offered a sacrifice on the mountain. So maybe that counts. But this is the first time you've heard the words he's used. Read them if you haven't read them before. Whose God does he pray to? Not his. He prays to the God of his father and his grandfather. What does he say to God? Are you reading it? You told me to go this way. You said this was the way I was supposed to go. And then he makes an astounding statement. For Jacob, it's astounding. What does he say? I am not worthy of the goodness and faithfulness and love you have shown me. For the first time, you see humility coming into Jacob's facade. The facade cracks and you start to see, well, we've seen the weakness before. He's acknowledging that. Keep going. What does he say? I had nothing when I came this way going towards Laban. Now I've come back with enough to make two camps. Save me from my brother Esau's clutches, for I'm afraid he may come and attack me and all that I have, mothers and children alike. And now he gets to the point of it. What promise had God made to him? You will have so many descendants, it'll be like the grains of the sand. They will be uncountable. And he's saying, I've only got 11, and they could all be wiped out tomorrow morning. You promised. You said, I'm not worthy of it. But you promised. Won't you act? And verse 13 or 14 is a very short verse. Jacob passed the night there. Where is there? Jump down to verse 22 or 23. Where is there? Where is this place he's going to spend the night? It's on the banks of a river. What's the name of the river? It is on the banks of a river 65 miles long, and it flows into the Jordan somewhere about halfway between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea, I'm told. 65 miles long. That river forms a border between two countries. The one he's passing through and the one that. And that river is called the Jabbok, J-A-B-B-O-K River. Does anybody notice anything interesting about that river? About the name? It sounds like Jacob with the letters rearranged. I hadn't noticed that. It's not the Jacob River, it's the Jabbok River. But it's pretty close. I don't know that he noticed this. I think he noticed something else. But here he is on the banks of the river. Which bank is he on, presumably?
North.
North bank. And he spends the night there. What do you think he does? Well, he goes to sleep. Does he go to sleep? Does he go to sleep? How could he? He's terrified. Hard to go to sleep when you're terrified. So in the middle of the night, it occurs to him, there's still some things I could do. And he does about three things more. Now let's back up. What was the first thing he did? He divided his assets into two camps to try to make them to where at least one would survive. The next thing, he prays to God. Next thing, he probably tries to go to sleep, can't go to sleep. My picture is he gets up and he does something. What does he do? Takes the choicest animals out of his herd, sends servants with them in the direction from which Esau is going to be coming. And he says, when you see Esau, offer these animals to him as a gift. And he gives them words to say. Do you see those words in there? He gives them words to say. Each group gets the same words. And what does he send? He sends an animal grouping that's big enough to be reproductive. He sends female and males. He sends different kinds. I don't know whether this ends up as four groups, donkeys, camels, cattle, sheep, or whether it ends up as eight groups, the males and the females. It could be four groups, it could be eight groups. And each group is supposed to say, these are a gift to you from our master Jacob, your servant Jacob. He's coming right behind us. Only Jacob never gets there because the animals keep coming. You got that picture? And off they go in the middle of the night. Where do they go? Cross the river and on their way. The night continues to go. The night continues to go. Verse 22 or 23, mine says the same night. Does yours show that? That same night, mine says. He got up and what did he do now? Took his wives and his slave wives. That mine makes that distinction. And their children. And does what? Puts them on the south bank of the river. Crosses at a ford. And then he does what? Goes back to the north side. Okay? Now let's picture this. When he headed for Laban, what did he have with him? Nothing but a stick and just enough food for a day or two. Where is he now? He's back to that same condition. Because everything he has is now out in front of him trying to placate his assumption of Esau's anger. Trying to placate that with gifts. He puts his women and children. This is not a particularly courageous man at this point. He's put his women and his children out in front of him. And he's put himself on the safe side of the river. And now happens, in just a couple of verses, one of the most important things that happens in the whole of the Old Testament. My translation says, a man came to him. And what happened? They wrestled. The name Jabbok. What does it mean? I did not know this until this week. The Jabbok River is a natural barrier, a deep ravine, I'm told, that it's cut through all the way through its length, or most of the way through its length. What would the water do as it went down through this ravine? 65 miles. It would be falling this way and that way. It would be dashing up against rocks and all this. They had a name for this river, and the name seems to have come from that. The name means emptying. The river is emptying water into the Jordan. It means, hold on a moment, slipping away, evacuating, and it means wrestling. You like that? The name of the river was the Wrestling River. This name had three or four meanings, one of which was wrestling. I'm claiming that one. A man comes to him, and they end up wrestling. Now, we've hit the part that's important. And we got 5 minutes left. So I want to hit a highlight or two. The first time we ever heard about Jacob, what was he doing? The very first time in the Bible record that we ever heard about Jacob, what was he doing? He was wrestling in the womb with his brother. And he hadn't quit. You can call it psychological if you want to. He was wrestling with Esau for the birthright. He was wrestling with his wife, with his mother as a tag team with Isaac for the blessing. He was wrestling with Laban for a wife. Fought that one to a tie. He was wrestling with Laban and his sons for wealth and power. Here he is about to meet Esau for the first time in years, beset with doubts and fears. And all of a sudden, he's in another wrestling match. And at the end of the night, he realizes it's been God he's wrestling with. How should we interpret this? He had been on a road of self-will. He had chosen this road. The road of self-will, the road of selfish goals, the road of using his own strength and his own resources to get what he wanted. And he had come to the banks of the wrestling river. Herds of cattle and sheep gone ahead, servants and retainers gone ahead, wives and children gone ahead, all alone. Didn't seem to have occurred to him to go any other direction. Laban, home, that's the arc, that's the line that he was following. What was the nature of this wrestling match? It seems to have been physical, but it has to have also been psychological, emotional, spiritual, all of those. How long did they wrestle? Until the dawn. And when the dawn came, the Bible says something fascinating. The man realized he could not prevail against Jacob. Something had changed in Jacob. I do not pretend to understand all of what it means. But it seems like Jacob was finally getting serious. There are commentators who say that Jacob had confessed his sins, had admitted everything that was going on. I don't think that had quite happened yet. I think it's coming in just a moment. But whatever had happened, Jacob realized, the only hope I have is to hang on. And there was a tenaciousness with which he was holding on to this man. And the man says, let me go. And Jacob says, are you reading it? I will not let you go unless you bless me. And the man says, what is your name? And the roof crashes in. Are you sensitive enough to know the power of that question? No other question could have hit Jacob as deep and as hard as that one. I will not let you go until you give me a blessing. The last time he went after a blessing, somebody said, who are you? What's your name? And what did Jacob say? I am Esau, your son. And by the end of it, Isaac says, the voice is Jacob's, but the hand is hairy and rough. The hand is Esau's. Jacob has disguised himself. And here the man, the angel or God himself, whoever this is, says to him, what's your name? And for the first time, he answers. What's his answer? I am the schemer. I'm the one who grabs from behind. I'm the scared mama's boy. I'm the con man. I'm the self-centered, self-serving, selfish, self-sufficient one. And when Jacob admitted who he was, God acted. What did he give him? The blessing was what?
A new name.
A new name. I usually say that new name is Prince of God, but that's not quite right. You know what the name is. You ought to be able to figure it out. He wrestles with God. The one who contends with God, if you want to put it on $2 words instead of 30 cent words. He wrestles with God. What else happened that night? He got his hip knocked out of joint. And he limped the rest of his life. A visible reminder of this moment. Whatever happened that night changed Esau permanently. Sorry, Jacob. Thank you. Changed Jacob permanently. The name Israel fit. Prince of God turns out not to fit nearly as well as the one who wrestles with God. Have you taken a look at the next verse? Chapter 33, verse 1. Looking up. That's all you get in my translation. What does yours say? When he looked up, what did he see? Esau and 400 men. The angel, or God himself, or the man, is gone. He's got a limp. And he sees Esau, and he sees the 400 men. It apparently is that he's crossed the river because he's back with his women, with his wives and children. He separates them. He finally approaches Esau. And what happens? Esau is gracious. So gracious that he invites him, come on down to Seir with me. And what does Jacob say? Great. Let's do it. And Esau says, I think I'll stay with you. Make sure you find the right road. And Jacob says, you don't have to do that. We've got the little ones with us, the little children, the little lambs, the little donkeys. They can't go so fast or it would kill them. In fact, if we tried to go fast, all the animals would die. A little hyperbole there. You go on ahead. Esau says, fine, I'll leave some of my men here to make sure you find your way properly. Oh, you don't need to do that. It's just a waste of their time. You've got more important things to do with them. Esau and his men leave. Where does Jacob go? Where is he? He's on the banks of the Jabbok River. Where is Esau going? He's going back to Edom, to Seir. Where does Jacob go? He goes to Succoth, and then to Shechem, and then to Bethel, and he settles in Bethel at the end of a much longer story. There's more to come. But Esau and Jacob separate. I think they'll see each other one last time when Isaac dies. But he never goes to Seir. Where does he go? He goes where he's supposed to go. He goes to the Promised Land. We ought to spend a half an hour talking about what it's like to wrestle with God in the darkness of the night, the dark nights of the soul, because that's a huge one for everybody to deal with. Sometimes you can see it coming, but you still don't realize what it's all is involved. And that seems to be the case with Jacob. Whatever this means, it's a pivot point in the whole of the Old Testament. If you want highlight points, points that mean something, even if we can't be completely sure of all that it means, this is one of the big ones. And where did it come? On the banks of the wrestling river. When the wrestling comes, what should you do? Hold on until God blesses you. Something about that tenacity seems to have been honored by God. And maybe that's enough for one day. Thank you for your attention. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, dark nights come to everyone. We don't want them. We don't welcome them. We do everything we can to avoid them. But sometimes they still come. And I pray for people for whom that comes. And I pray for me when it comes for me. Help us understand that what Jacob did in his desperation was the only thing that can be done. To grab hold of you to the point where we can never let go. And ask you to bless us. And trust that that blessing will be exactly what we need. We pray all this in your Son's name. Amen.